Welcome to Coaching Culture, the podcast where we discuss how we can use sports and not let them use us. I'm JP Nurbin, the founder of Thrive On Challenge, and the mission for this podcast is to connect leaders in athletics to help us create a transformational culture by building leadership and character. Now let's get started. Welcome to episode number 45 of the Coaching Culture Podcast, 10 Parent Suggestions for Coaches, Part 2. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and today is a continuation of my conversation with Angela, who's a sports parent. And she's sharing with us coaches some ways from a parent's perspective in which we can improve the relationship with the players and improve our relationships with the parents. So if you missed episode number 44, go back and listen because she shared some very, very valuable ideas on that episode and has some valuable perspective to share with us today. So enjoy. All right. Principle number 6 is be aggressive, aggressive, not passive aggressive.
I think I probably heard somebody say that one time and it just resonated with me because we all know people, not just coaches, we all know people who are saying one thing and they mean something completely different. They just want you to read between the lines. And, you know, if you're a coach who has something to say to the entire group that's applicable to the entire group, by all means, say it. But if you are really annoyed by one or two people, their repeated mistake or their lack of listening or their bad attitude or laziness or whatever it is, do not bash the entire group. When there's really one or two people that you really need to have a side conversation with, and all of this, you know who you are or things like that, that really just brings down your achievers. You know, there are those pleaser kids that are going to take everything you say as if it applies to them. And so if you've got something to say to an individual, you know, have a side conversation. Don't try to beat around the bush. Don't try to throw it all at the entire team and have them all looking at each other going, wait, what do you think she's talking about me? Or what did he mean by that? You know, just say what you mean what you say. Again, I think we've covered that in one of the first 5.
Well, I think you gave some great new examples of that too. And I think I always like to really reflect on those team talks that the coach gives or that I would give in the past where I laid into the team really because two or three players or one player was just dogging it in practice or had a bad attitude. And it's just like, this is an issue that I think everyone can learn from. And I understand that. But the majority of that conversation of that tough talk needs to be had one-on-one and in a productive conversation where you are meeting that player where they're at, asking good questions, helping them to become self-aware of their impact of their actions. Not in, like you said, this big passive-aggressive rant. Your principle number 7 is don't take yourself too seriously.
Well, I had a great coach, either in the 7th or the 8th grade, I can't remember, who was a really, really good coach. He knew the game. He knew how to teach the game. He had a ton of passion, but he always was able to throw in something humorous, and it wasn't humor that was degrading someone. And a lot of times the humor was self-deprecating, and that went so far with us, because he didn't take himself too seriously. He would do outrageous things and, you know, kind of make himself look a little goofy sometimes, but talk about motivational. I mean, he really inspired us to see it's okay if I make a mistake, instead of just saying, hey, it's okay if you make a mistake, and then you make a mistake, and then you get dogged for making a mistake. Mm-hmm. But we really believed in practice, it's okay to make a mistake. This is the place. If you're going to do it here, right? And so we were free. We weren't stressed mentally. We gave everything that we had because we appreciated the fact that he pointed out his own flaws. He wasn't just standing over us like the basketball god pointing out our flaws.
Yeah.
And so I think that really goes a long way with gaining the respect of your players.
Of all the things that you've said, these 10, I think there's a lot of them that I really should have heard when I first started off in coaching. I think this was probably the number one thing I was really bad at. I really took myself too seriously and really wasn't able to make fun of myself. And I think you make a great point about the self-deprecating humor and how it can be really beneficial. In fact, I was actually the opposite. I would try to get everyone to laugh, but at the expense of just kind of picking on a few guys that I thought could handle it. And right. They weren't the weaker of the group, right? They were probably, but, and everyone would laugh and that player would laugh. But the reality is, you know, we don't understand. We don't really know how hard things are for kids at times and how they may really be taking that. And the laugh is really more of a front. And I've definitely stuck my foot in my mouth plenty of times. And yeah, it's so much easier just to make fun of yourself. It lightens the mood. It creates this culture of vulnerability, of safety when we do that.
In fact,
sometimes we talk about vulnerability a lot in this podcast, the importance of sharing a struggle or a challenge. But I think to start off a team meeting or a practice, you know, like I'm really struggling with this. But I think sometimes just making fun of yourself in a lighthearted way can really bring up the mood, you know?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, it totally lightens the mood. And people are going to perform better when they're more relaxed. I think they just are. And by relaxed, it doesn't mean that they're lazy or they're running slower or whatever. It's just mentally, especially kids and all that they're going through. I think that really is just a very small thing that has a huge impact.
Yeah, absolutely. One little side question here for you. If a coach is good at this, all right, they're not too serious. They're managing this well. How do they handle that relationship? Maybe you got some insight on this. How do they handle a relationship with a parent who is taking themselves way too seriously when it comes to being the sports parent?
Wow, that's a good question. I think it probably starts with having regular conversations. And I don't mean you have to talk 3 times a week. Who has time for that? Nobody does. But just being willing to, you know, see someone and say hello and shake their hand and just kind of lighten the mood a little bit so that you build a rapport, so that maybe at some point you can crack a joke about yourself and see how they respond. And maybe that joke that you're cracking applies to the both of you. And I'm not saying be dishonest, but I'm saying if there's something, like if there is maybe a flaw that the two of you share, after you have a relationship, you can make fun of that flaw in yourself. And maybe that parent might clue in and say, oh, wow, okay, you can relate. Wow, I can kind of see that in myself too. Maybe that brings down the level of defensiveness that parent might have.
I don't know if this was a good idea by me or not. It seemed to have had some positive effect. I don't know if it'll be beneficial long term, but there was a parent at a game recently who was crossing a million different lines as far as their behavior on the sideline. And, it was just a lighthearted summer league game. And I kind of jokingly said to the parent afterwards, who I had kind of built up a relationship, and, you know, man, next time, you know, you need to come down and help me out because you were doing such a good job coaching over there. I don't know if that's a good thing to say or not, but it seemed to kind of help them to become self-aware.
Yeah, no, I totally think that is a great idea because you're not going at them in an aggressive way. You let them know, hey, you know what? I hear you from the stands. I do. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. And boy, if I could have made that happen, I sure would have, right? I mean, I think it's a good way to lighten the mood, to joke around with the parents in that way.
Eighth principle, encourage, encourage, encourage.
I used to, you know, again, before I had kids, when I was closer to being in college, I used to be a lot more, probably less likely to want to use a positive approach because of the coaching style that I played under, which was, you know, strong, tough, serious. And then with the exception of the one coach that I had, that started coming back to me the way that Coach Collins would use more humor, and the way that he would end the huddle or end the post game with something good for us to take away. I think he was the exception and not the norm, because we live in a time, I think, when there's so much false positive affirmation, or what's the word I'm looking for? False praise, that we who are serious and really take things seriously want to almost counterbalance and go the other way. But you've got to be encouraging. And it doesn't mean you've got to tell someone a lie when they did well, when they didn't. But you've got to encourage them. Like when we had little kids and we're teaching them how to swing a bat, it was a pet peeve to sit at the Little League field and hear, you know, you've got a kid up there who's hacking at the ball like he's got an axe in his hand. And what do you hear the parents in the stands saying? Good job. Good swing, buddy. Do it again.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that was not a good swing. But do you yell at him? That's a terrible swing. Don't swing. No. You teach him the next chance you get. And when he gets to the dugout, say, hey, you know what? I love the way you were up there and you tried and you tried and you tried and you never gave up. That's fantastic. And so you can translate that to high school players as well. Some nights the ball just does not drop. Or sometimes you just cannot hit. And you don't have to give someone false praise by saying, oh, that was great. You were wonderful. Just say, wow, you know what? It just wasn't your night, but I love the fact you never gave up. I love the fact that you got back on defense. I love the fact that you got after every ground ball or ran underneath every fly ball. There's always something positive you can say that's honest.
Have you seen the movie Whiplash yet?
No.
You need to check it out. And anybody who listens to the podcast needs to check out Whiplash. It's a fantastic film about a young musician who goes to college at his art school, and he wants to become the greatest, jazz drummer in the world. And he has this crazy, very transactional music teacher. But this music teacher obviously takes it to a bit of an extreme. But he says something very powerful in there, that two of the most dangerous words in the English dictionary is good job. Just like, it's just
good
very
job.
Vague. It's just very general. And what you hit on you were spot on there. And that's what all the research shows, is that just good job when they're not doing it is just fake. And it is, you have to be really intentional. Like, I mean, I would challenge any coach, this next game you coach at, have one of your assistants just literally mark down every time you say something like good job, like without being specific about what you're talking about. I love to see you out there swinging so hard, and I think I am so bad at this, and I'm like, what am I? Nobody, they're not even listening when you say good job. It's just in one ear, out the next, and they have zero respect for you.
That's true
when you do that. But yeah, check out that movie. It's fantastic. Number nine, don't be afraid. You mentioned this in the previous podcast as well, but we'll get a little bit more into it. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone in the beginning so that later, if necessary, the difficult phone call will be less difficult because you've laid the groundwork.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty simple. The problem is, with everybody, I think the number one problem is just this time. It takes time. And just like you said, you have to be intentional about so many other things. You have to be intentional at trying to establish a good rapport with someone. Because, as we talked about before, you need to be able to say things to people that are true and kind and necessary without a blow up. And if you have put yourself out there, if you've been the first to extend your hand, I think most people, again, like we said, even if they don't particularly like you, even if they don't agree with you, they're going to respect the fact that you are going the extra mile. And that's really what it is.
I love that. I think that that's such a big point, that we take the first step to building that relationship. I think it just, here's why. One of them is that one of the biggest influences of sports performance is sleep, is nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Those two facts alone, we rely on what's going on in an athlete's house.
Right.
Parents are probably the biggest influence of sleep and nutrition. And we can have even just a conversation about that, of just, you know, starting to engage them there. But even more than that, the other really big influence is a child's feeling that no matter what their performance or how they perform, that they're loved and they're cared about. And I think we can engage and help to remind parents, especially the parents that have sometimes lost perspective, which they are.
Right.
Which is, why did you really want your kid to play sports to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
Was it about achievements or was it about who they were becoming?
Mm-hmm.
And every parent's going to say, well, it was really about like being healthy and all this. And it's like, mm-hmm. and you can engage and ask questions. I think that that is a very, I don't know, maybe your feedback on that. If I was to call and just get to know a parent and just, you know, ask about them, ask about their family, and that be the one question I ask about the sports, that would be it. It would be, why did you want your child to play sports to begin with?
Oh, I think that's a great question, because I, in the last year, have asked myself that same question. Wait, why are we doing this again? And obviously, there's one main answer. But when I am honest with myself and I go back to the very, you know, foundational reason, it's not exactly what I thought it was at the time. Because I've seen over the last 14 years how things have changed. My kids have changed. I've changed. Values change. And I have to be honest and say that, you know, the reason we said we were doing it in the beginning, it's probably not exactly what we thought. But I think that's a fair question. And I think also by having that conversation with the coach, you know, there's a very good chance that if they don't have a positive opinion of you simply because of maybe something they've heard someone say, or maybe they've misunderstood watching you coach a game, it's very disarming for you to go to them one-on-one, because that's when they might say, oh, wow, he's not at all like I heard, or he's not at all like I thought he was after seeing him coach in that really intense game. Wow, he's actually a really nice guy. You know, I think that's another plus to you reaching out to that person. And like you said, especially asking the questions, you know, what is it that you want for your son or daughter?
And I think when it comes down to it, within that conversation, you're getting to know them as people. You're getting to know their struggles, the challenges that they are facing as a family day by every day. You're getting to know what their other interests are beyond the sport. But then you're also able to say, listen, I care about your son. I'm with you in this. And I think that that's huge.
Yeah, because you're building a partnership at that point.
Yeah. Last principle, number 10, be fair.
Fairness is a tricky thing because life is not fair. But the things that we can control, I feel like we should. And that, you know, a lot of times manifests itself in how we behave when we're unhappy or we're dissatisfied or we're frustrated. And we've talked also about the fact that there are some players that you just, you know, your personalities just gel and you just mesh and it's easy. And then there are some players that might be like sandpaper to you. But if you treat them fairly, again, I feel like your stock just goes way up between the players, between the parents. If you're going to shred the kid that gets on your nerves, you have to be willing to shred the kid that's just in your back pocket all the time if it's deserving, right? I mean, we don't just try to keep equal tally marks by how much we yell at people. And especially for parent coaches, you know, there's an old saying that you've got to yell at your own kid twice for every time that you yell at someone else's kid, because otherwise people will think you're playing favorites. It's the same on high school teams. If you're not careful, people will be able to clearly tell who you're favoring, and that really can create a lot of underlying tension that's just really damaging, I think.
you know, I think you bring up, you know, the principle itself, be fair, is obviously very, very simple, but you bring up some good points. And I think we have to think about as coaches, one is about favoritism. And I know I have said this a million times, and I hear other coaches say it, and many people would argue with me on this. I try not to say it anymore, which is coaches have favorites, or I have favorites. I like the kids that work hard. Sure. They have a good attitude and all that.
Right.
Yes, we may like those players more. But when it comes to loving players, I think the difference between liking and loving them, the loving part is where we say, you know what? I'm going to meet that player wherever they're at. I'm going to work with them wherever they're at. And I'm not going to sit there and compare them to the guy that does have all these intangibles. Everyone's circumstances are different. Everyone was brought up differently. They're not excuses, but they're reasons for why things are the way they are.
Oh,
and
yeah, absolutely.
Too often as coaches, I've talked about this on my Culture Builders podcast recently, but too often as coaches, we keep imagining or promoting the dream player. That dream player that works hard, shows up, and has a great attitude. Instead of just seeing every player for who they are and seeing them for who they could be.
Right.
And that's what it is. And that's where I think you move from liking a player to loving a player. Yes, you're going to get along with some players a little bit easier. Yes, things are going to gel. But those players need less of your attention in most cases, because the players that you have the friction with, those are the relationships you really got to dig in, and you really got to be creative and find ways to nurture that relationship.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, that was fantastic. Definitely some great valuable stuff there, which I'll share your notes that you sent me with a few of my notes added to it on my newsletter with all you coaches out there. Angela, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. It's great to have your perspective. Very, very unique.
Thank you, JP. I appreciate being on.
So one of my favorite suggestions from that podcast was to pick up the phone sooner rather than later. I was speaking with a college coach recently, and he was reflecting on a visit that one of his recruits and this recruit's parents took to come out to his school. And the visit went really well, but it really started off kind of slow. And after talking through this visit with this coach about what he could do better next time, he realized he had never called the mother of this player before she came on campus. And he wasn't exactly sure why he hadn't, but he knew that it would have really helped to break the ice before this recruit and his family came on campus and would have started to build that relationship that he had to do during that visit. We as coaches, I think we need to really rethink our approach. We need to start seeing parents as a partner to building our culture and supporting the men and women we coach. And I make this suggestion only because I have done the exact opposite for a large portion of my coaching career. I've seen parents as the enemy. I've seen them as the opposition. But I can tell you what, that approach just doesn't work. And it's not working. And we've got to start building relationships with parents if we really want to make a difference. All right, that's it for today. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it with a friend. Thanks for listening in.